Welcome to the next installment of Opinions of Value, Valkyrie's very own virtual chat series. We're glad you could join us for today's episode. This series was created to encourage open and honest dialogue about the health and state of the commercial real estate industry through the lens of commercial appraisers. On Opinions of Value, we will explore everything from the trends shaping the commercial real estate market at large to the challenges impacting the way valuers conduct their jobs in this digital age. We're really excited to dive into this month's episode with an amazing panel of guest speakers. Please welcome Casey Conway, principal and co-founder of Red Shoe Economics. Casey, go ahead and give us a little introduction.
I'm the old guy. I used to always be the young guy in the work environment. Now I'm over 16. I'm the old guy. Gray thinning hair. Lived through too many recessions. Multi-generation MAI appraiser. So I'm gonna bring back all the old history.
Thanks so much. Next, we've got Rodman Sly, CEO of Evolve X Capital.
Thanks, Lucas. Yeah, I'm Rodman Sly. I was the 2021 president of the Appraisal Institute. I'm a commercial appraiser by background, also a real estate broker. But I've got the MAI designation and the SRA designation, one being, of course, commercial, and one being residential. And I've been doing real estate since I was 18 years old. I don't know how many years you guys think that. I don't want to date myself too bad, but I started back in about 1990. So I've been doing real estate a long time. And right now I've got a private equity fund that focuses on short-term vacation rentals.
Awesome. Thanks, Robin. Next, we've got Johnny White, CEO of American Society of Appraisers.
Hello, everyone, and I'm glad to be here. Like I said, I'm Johnny White, the CEO of ASA, and ASA is an appraiser association, which is unique when you look at most organizations. And the reason why we're so unique is we represent many different types of appraisers, not only real property appraisers, but business valuation appraisers, personal property appraisers, machine and equipment appraisers, gym and jewelry appraisers, appraiser review managers, and so forth. So that organization or these members make up ASA, and we've actually just celebrated our 85th anniversary. So we've been around for a very, very long time. Glad to be here.
Amazing. Thank you for joining. Let's get started here. We're nearing the end of a transformative year, and talks of a looming recession are persistently buzzing. During economic downturns is when appraisers and the overall appraisal community are most vulnerable to business disruption. Many valuation professionals want to know what leaders within the appraisal industry are seeing across markets. And we're here today with three undisputed industry leaders to discuss the state of the real estate appraisal market. We're going to be discussing how the economic downturn is going to impact appraisal businesses, both for small shops and for large full-service firms. Additionally, the influence this could have on key initiatives the appraisal community has been working on. And finally, what are the best opportunities to explore in the coming months? So let's go ahead and get started. And the first question up, we'll kick this off to Casey. In past cycles, how were real estate appraisers most impacted during economic downturns or market stagnation?
Well, traditionally, going back to even to the 70s and Jimmy Carter era, they generally benefited because when we have turmoil, the people that hold the capital, whether it's debt or equity, need to understand the impacts of the economics in the market on value. So they tend to order more appraisals. But what we've learned through COVID and in the recent years is that probably the banks are going to act differently. The capital sources are going to act differently. They're not going to reconstitute the big workout departments. They learned during COVID with the hotels, it was more efficient to bundle those loans and sell them to private equity without setting up a workout department. And when I was at the Fed, what we studied and learned was that about one third of the cost of a loan loss given a default was really constituting a workout team and department and going through all that. So if you can cut that piece out, you have more to negotiate on selling those loans. So I think the appraisers are going to be bypassed. In your market, maybe private equity or the entities that buy those bundles and then have to figure out what they keep or what they sell. So I don't think it's going to be great for the bank work. And I think it's going to be, we're going to have to look in different places.
Yeah. And to add on to that, I mean, I totally agree with Casey stated there. I think the last downturn that we had was in 2008. A lot of our members learned a lot during that process and were able to, you know, kind of see the foreseeable future. So I think appraisers, what I'm hearing is they're diversifying in terms of what they're doing. As Casey said, you know, the banks maybe not lending as much, but there's other areas that they can work in.
Yeah, if you think historically too, I mean, appraisers typically do really well when things are going really good. They're doing well when things are going really bad. And so it's usually that in-between time when things are a little bit uncertain or you're not sure what's going to happen, where we're kind of flatlining a little bit. And I think that's where we're at right now. It'll be interesting to see if what Casey's saying does come to fruition, if they do start just shipping those loans off to like private equity or such. Either way, I will tell you one thing, be a real good appraiser right now. When you go through any kind of recession like this, the first thing that banks do is start cutting down their lists. They want to make sure that the people that are on top of their list are the best appraisers in the industry. So I've always told the people who have worked for me as appraisers that we have to be exceptional during downtimes, because we want to be a place where the people who really need to understand where value is in a down market, we want to be those. We want to be that person. We want to be that reliable source. We want to have accurate values, and we want to be really good at what we do.
It sounds like, Casey, you see this downturn being different, and maybe Johnny and Robin see it being a little bit different this time around as well.
I do, and I think piggybacking on what both Rodney and Johnny said, or Rodman and Johnny said, was, you know, as appraisers, we tend to think about the core food group, the office, the industrial, the retail, the apartment, and maybe some subdivision work. But it's really broadened now. And what we're finding is that there's more business value or enterprise value and more property types than just hotel and restaurants. It's in self-storage. It's in, you know, manufactured housing. And it's in adaptive reuse. And we're doing a lot more adaptive reuse. In fact, I do a lot in that space. And I have a database of over 40,000 adaptive reuse projects, which is more than the entire self-storage industry. And so there's a lot of opportunity in property tax appeals, segregating out the business and enterprise values, helping your clients understand that, understand why they should pay more than maybe just the real estate value for an asset, because there's also an ongoing business enterprise in that situation. So I think appraisers, the opportunities are look beyond, look at the for rent subdivisions, that whole market has dried up as private equities pull back on entities like American Homes for Rent. So how is all that going to work out? So I think there's a lot more as you go deeper and peel back the onion into more stink in the property type. So the more you can do that, understand the economics, understand the where and why. And we're going to geographically see some very unique things, like in the Colorado River Basin, the seven states in the Western drought, they all have to cut their water usage by 1/3 January 1. What does that mean for value? How do you think that through? What does it mean for feasibility, the principal substitution to add another one? So I think there's just a lot more complexity. Those appraisers that can figure it out, adapt, and also leverage technology to get there will do really well.
Yeah. And I would piggyback on that and say Casey's dead on the reuse. I mean, we're seeing things that we've never seen before. I mean, in terms of how we do retail now, I mean, you know, COVID changed that. How we do office now, COVID changed that. So it's going to be interesting to see a lot of these reuses, how properties that were historically used one way get adapted into another use. It's just a very unique environment, one that I've never seen in my lifetime. As a matter of fact, I'd have to probably say a lot of people haven't seen in their lifetime, but it'll be interesting to see what happens with these different property types moving forward. I don't think we've seen the full impact yet.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, you look at office space. I mean, that's because of what happened during the pandemic and individuals not wanting to come back. You know, how do you reuse that space to ensure that you're still getting that income at the same level? It's a different world than we've seen over the last, you know, of my lifetime, I think any of our lifetime here.
And piggybacking on Johnny's comment on office, so the phrase I've been using with a lot of clients that are all trying to figure out what to do with their office is, will remote office do to office what e-commerce did to big box retail? And we've got to really be thinking in the concepts of highest and best use and principal substitution that we kind of all forgot about or we don't teach real deep anymore. Those are going to be core principles that people will pay the appraiser to really help them answer those two questions.
Yeah, excellent. Now, are you guys hearing anything from industry peers about how this looming recession is already impacting the appraisal industry?
I mean, one thing is the reducing workforce. I mean, we've seen a lot of the corporations starting to look at reduction there. So that's impacting the industry.
We're at square one right now. I mean, literally, I mean, I know that people are talking I know that the metrics say that we've been in somewhat of a recession for a little bit, but at the same time, nobody's really felt that. But I think now that interest rates are going up, like Johnny was saying, they're starting to cut a lot of staffs. I think the real impacts are probably going to be seen in the next, you know, maybe 6 months, 12 months, where we're going to see it a lot more than we've seen it in the last 12 months. So, you know, right now it's crystal balling a lot of stuff that we're having to kind of think through what might this look like, because I don't think we're really truly experiencing yet the true impacts that are yet to come.
Yeah, let me throw one other out there is the whole ESG thing. So if you're an appraisal firm in a shop and you don't have an ESG tab on your website, you don't realize that you are already being pre-screened out from multi-city, multi-state type of assignments. And so you've got to tell your story. So if you've done something or you have staff that's got diversity or you support crew. So my little company, you know, we're a majority woman-owned business. And that makes a huge difference in RFPs and whatnot. So I really encourage the appraisers, look at your website, look at the story that you tell on your ESG story. If you've valued stuff that's been an environmental conversion or adaptive reuse, put that in there. If you've got diverse workforce, even though you've scaled back, tell that story. You will be more in line to be considered up front. And if you don't, you may not realize you're already being screened out.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, Casey, because ESG, you know, I think all of us knew it was coming, but we really didn't put the right things in place and ensure that we or organizations were in the right position. And now, especially as we saw it during the pandemic, people are paying more attention to this, you know, stockholders, consumers, customers, and so forth. And so they're only buying from organizations or purchasing or working with organizations that have a stand in either of these three areas. And as a valuer, I mean, I think we're all trying to figure out, you know, how does the value of that asset look from an environmental standpoint, you know, 5-10 years from now, or the societal standpoint or the governmental standpoint. So you're absolutely right in reference to organizations, especially appraisal firms. If you are doing something in that area, you definitely need to scream from the mountains that you have things in these different buckets.
And let me give you two other areas that appraisers right now could use the downtime over the holidays to really beef up on. So one, every public company gets an ESG score from one of the proxy advisors, Glass Lewis or ISS, and they do a pretty lousy job at it. Being a director on a public REIT, they got hit by an activist investor. We learned the hard way. We were industrial, so that all we did was cut down trees, pave over roads, and bring in diesel trucks, which is not what industrial is. So ESG scoring is coming to the property level. And one of our colleagues or peer industry groups is IREM, and they've developed a really good, robust model for doing property level ESG scoring. Get to know your IREM colleagues and their model. It's very good. And it could, they're paying as much as an appraisal fee, believe it or not, a fast and furious appraisal fee for an ESG scoring on a property. The second one is there are new programs. One of them is called PACE, the Property Assessed Clean Energy Program. And about 35 states have it. And what it enables you is if you're a property owner of a property that's dilapidated, it needs energy and environmental upgrades, you can go through the tax authority in your state to get the capital to upgrade that property. And guess what? You don't have to ask the lender for permission because the tax lien is the senior to the bank debt and it's assumable and they underwrite it so that you can fund all that. They can provide the funding. So if banks shut down on lending and they don't need appraisals, the PACE programs, Property Assessed Clean Energy, the best program in the country is in Texas. A lady by the name of Charlene Undigger is the top set in the country. But 35 states, that's an area that you can become a unique specialist on and have a really good practice the next 2 years.
Excellent, Casey. Well, it's definitely foreshadowing into a few of the questions we'll be talking about as we go here. In terms of, you know, the impact that it's having on the appraisal, you know, industry at large, you know, are you guys seeing any staffing issues or cuts in the current climate? And, you know, how is that really going to adversely affect the industry's ability to attract young talent?
Well, yeah, I can speak, you know, from what I'm seeing personally. And you know, we're still looking for talent. I mean, we're always looking for talented people. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, there's only a limited pool of appraisers. We always are trying to encourage new people to come in. We want, you know, we want a diverse group of people coming into our profession that we can train and teach. But we also have a core where, you know, when you get into these situations where things are changing, a lot of times people might go to another firm or they find, you know, when you're going through change, it's a good time to also change, to maybe do something different, maybe something you've been thinking about doing. So we're seeing people that are moving around maybe to other firms, but we haven't seen a lot of people let go. I know that I also do a lot of work with BBG, and we're not letting anybody go. Matter of fact, we're hiring when we can because we want to bring in the best people that we can right now. So we're not seeing any negative impacts on that. We're actually growing right now at the same time, and we're actually pretty excited where we're going. Not to say that I haven't seen some layoffs or some firms that have been making some cutbacks. So it's not all rosy, but like I said, it pays to be a really, really good firm right now.
One thing I'll add on to that is, as you look at the data for those that's in this profession, unfortunately, it's aging out. We're getting a number of individuals that are looking to retire. Now, I think the pandemic prolonged this retirement for some because, you know, the retirement fund doesn't look as good as it did prior to the pandemic. So they're sticking around for a little bit longer, but you're aging out. And the problem we're finding is that we're not attracting the young professionals to this this profession. And I think we as an industry, as a profession, need to do a little better job of promoting the benefits that come into this profession. We need to create more awareness about this profession, because as individuals are, you know, selecting to go to college and looking at the fields that they're going to go in, valuation is not the number one selection there. So we got to do a better job of getting to not only the college, but down to the high school level, and even earlier than that, to give them awareness about this profession so that when that time comes, when they are going to make a decision, hopefully they'll make decision to come to this profession rather than any other profession. But that's one thing that ASA, and I know a number of my colleagues at the other organizations, are looking to do, really create more awareness so we can bring in that young talent to offset those that are going to be retiring.
Yeah, so where I am seeing the cuts from clients and things that we do advisory work for is in the bank environment. They're obviously slowing down. Understand, as the Fed raises interest rates, what the Fed is telling the banks is that lending is inflationary. It's economic activity, so quit doing it. So the number of appraisals being ordered, the need for review staff is definitely coming under scrutiny at the banks. I think there already is, and there's going to be a lot more cuts in the review function. And a lot of those folks have let their skills atrophy. So you better get back in some classes and talk to Rodman and Johnny and whatnot about how you actually do an appraisal again. You're not just sitting at a desk and you know, finding spelling errors and whatnot and not really material things. The second thing I'll tell you is that when I try to hire a young person, we find up is either they don't show up for work because they got a better job since they accepted mine, or they only stay a few months because they get 25 to 50% more. So I've pivoted, and I'm actually hiring on a subcontract basis the retired folks. They get tired of three cruises and they don't want to go home and do the to-do list with mom or grandma. So they love to take on assignments. So I do a lot of complex feasibility, litigation work, and I can hire them and they're plug and play. I don't need to supervise them. They're very affordable. So where you might be thinking about how to recruit all the young people, don't overlook that there's a lot of retired folks on our side that will come in and they'll fill those gaps when you have work surges. So I found that a really effective strategy recently. And they actually know the same music that I do. So it's even a better benefit.
Yeah. And Casey, you bring up a good point. I mean, we have to be more flexible. You know, we've seen a lot of people leave their jobs because they want more flexibility. They don't want that 9 to 5 and that sort of thing. So there's this gig group out there now that willing to do part-time work, project-based work, and so forth. So you're absolutely right. Organizations, firms have to be more flexible. And as they're looking to, you know, get work done, being willing to bring in these individuals that's just going to do a project here and there and then, you know, leave. They don't want to necessarily be on the payroll. They just want to get paid for that project.
Yeah, and the other thing I would add is the more as practitioners that we can do to diversify our business. So I'd only do, you know, maybe 20% that's actual appraisal work. I do a lot of expert witness. I do feasibility. You know, I do strategic planning. I do rezoning type stuff that actually pay really well. And they tune up those skills of the appraiser, the market research, the economics, the writing, all those other skills. So think broadly, because again, your younger workforce, they want to be challenged and they don't want to just be doing fast and cheap all day. And so the more you can diversify that practice, it pays better. And you actually find that your workforce enjoys it and might stick around a little bit longer.
It's funny too, Casey, because like you talk about the diversification. We preach that all the time. We need to diversify. We need to, cast a larger net. But getting appraisers to do that sometimes is difficult. They want, they get really uber focused on a single asset type or a single property type or just whatever it might be. They really focus in, but you're dead on. I mean, diversification is what will really help you through the ups and downs also, because you can go with the ebbs and flows that we see in real estate. So you're dead on there. I think more people do need to diversify.
Yeah. I mean, there's a trend for some of our members talking about diversification. They've been doing real property, pretty much the entire career, but they're trying to diversify and they're now looking in the business valuation space, starting to take education and coursework and so forth in that space because they want to diversify because they're seeing some of their working shrunken up a little bit there.
Yeah. Casey, you mentioned something I want to touch back on with, interest rate spikes. Can you talk a bit about why interest rate spikes have so much influence on lender appraisal volume for refinancing and sale transactions?
Yeah, so as appraisers, we think that banks sit there and they look at the average of the, last comps per square foot per unit and the average cap rate and that fourth approach to value, which has never been validated, and I hate, which is called the averaging technique. And we forget skill sets that when we're in transition, we need to look a little more forward. So let's talk about our old band of investment friend. And if you look at what's happened from a 10-year treasury going, from a low 3 and 7 interest rate hikes, and we really should be at about a 5% 10-year treasury, and I think we will be there by January, and do your old band of investment and look at when banks were lending at 70% loan to value and more aggressive LTV and, their interest only coverage, was, say a 6.5 to a 7. Fast forward the last 6 to 12 months and do that same band of investment. You could justify a 4.5 to 5 cap rate 12 months ago. You can't justify anything under 7.5% today. That's what's ahead of us. Do the clients understand it? And do appraisers, do we have the courage and understand those skills to explain to our client that what's coming over the next 12 months is probably a 25 to 40% correction in value from the change in the cost of the capital stack? And so what I see is, the lender's just pulling way back. We're going to see different sources of capital. I was just on a call with United Arab Emirates where they don't want any debt. They want any debt bank, U.S. debt bank involved. They want all equity. They'll close in 30 days. They know the markets and the property type they want. Boom. Same with South Korea, Vietnam, even companies that are finding they can't get their supply chain, their factories and their warehouses financed. They're willing to pull back now on stock repurchases and put capital into owning their own buildings and being the basically the construction lender to the merchant developer. So what is the underwriting for that type of entity? Have we really discovered it? So I've got 5 new clients. They're all international that have all redefined all of those issues. And they're looking very much at the, the band of investment. And then they test it with the principal substitution. They want these foreign investors that are investing cash. They want a replacement cost analysis because they understand with inflation, that same asset's going to cost 10 to 20% more to build next year or to replace. So they're a little more comfortable saying, I'll buy a little more aggressive on cap rate today, knowing it should be higher, but I'm going to grow into that cap rate because the cost to replace is going up. And with inflation, the rents will go up and I'll have a more normalized 7 or 8 cap rate in 24 months. So those are all the skills we were taught growing up. I mean, I go back to them in all my legacy father and grandfather's books and read that stuff all the time. But we kind of got to go back to those old skills. And I would dust off that replacement cost skill set, go take the Marshall Valuation certification course to know actually how to do it. Because if not, and we're against each other in court, I'm mopping you up off the floor.
Yeah, and I'll say this, from an investor standpoint, I'm excited. I mean, I'm really excited. The market conditions are set up, like we talked about, the real estate market, it cycles, right? It cycles up, it cycles down, it cycles up, it cycles. It just is a constant cycle. And you talk about, what happened in 08 and 09 and during that period of time. If you could have bought, say, $50 million of residential real estate back in 2010, I probably wouldn't be on your podcast right now. I'd probably be sitting on a beach right now, sipping a nice cocktail. But I think that there's going to be a lot of opportunity. Whenever you get into these types of market downturns in the market, it creates opportunities. So the great thing, like Casey is saying, is like these people, when they're doing their modeling, they're doing their modeling based on current economics, right? They might have a little bit of down. They might say, well, I'm going to play it a little bit down and know I'm going to get some upside. But for the most part, what a better time to be operating when you're an investor, to be able to really look at not things when we're paying these four caps and these, you know, 4.5, 5, whatever the cap rate might be, depending on the asset type. But we've got really good opportunities right now. Like, we're buying a lot of short-term vacation rental properties. And for a long time, I can't even tell you how glad I am that I wasn't buying that asset type 3 months ago, 4 months ago, right? I mean, it has teed itself up. The markets have teed themselves up for opportunities. So at the same time, and I tell this to appraisers too, who better to be in the investment portion of what we do also than appraisers who understand valuation, who can go in and look at the current market conditions and then figure out what the upside potential is going to be, or think back to that last economic cycle and say, boy, yeah, I missed out on that last economic cycle, but I'm not going to miss out on this one. A lot of appraisers, they'll tell me, they'll go, I'm not an investor. I'm an appraiser. I'm not an investor. I'm an appraiser. But who better to invest than appraisers? I mean, we get it. We get the markets. We understand value. We understand what pushes values up. We understand what pushes values down. We understand the cycles. When an appraiser tells me that they're not an investor, I go, man, use that education, use that knowledge, go out there and capitalize when you get an opportunity like this. Yeah, down markets are tough on some people. They just are. But the good thing is there are people out there. If you're a savvy investor, there are opportunities for those folks out there right now. And they're going to just continue to get better. I tell everybody, next month's going to be a little better. The month after that's going to be a little better. The next month, we're not on an upswing by any means. We're definitely on a downswing.
Let me add two things to Robin that I'm sure he does a lot. So as appraisers, we need to be better at reading, not just proofing our reports and getting them out faster and quicker, but reading other industry data. So let me give you two tips. I read the earnings reports on every company that affects my market or my clients or tenants in my buildings, because under the penalty of perjury of the SEC, they have to tell you the next 6 months what the plan is. So they're telling you how many stores they're going to close. They're telling you that Walmart and Home Depot and Lowe's aren't building garden centers anymore. Those are becoming where they do e-commerce fulfillment because they already do all the lawn chairs and that stuff on e-commerce. So it tells me about what's functionally obsolete in those big box buildings. So I really read the earnings. So look at the earnings of the companies, the public companies in your market, your buildings and your tenants. The second thing is look at things like Urban Land Institute just came out with their annual 2023 Emerging Trends Report. I was involved with the first one at Equal Real Estate over a quarter century ago. It's one of their best reports. And they said two things. They said, number one, buyers and sellers can't agree on price today. Sellers still think their properties are valued at 4 cap rates, and buyers are saying, no, try 6, 7, or 8. So there's a big disconnect, which is going to affect transactions. And they go through each property type and tell you incredible things. So really become a voracious reader. Look at earnings reports and look at things like, you know, Urban Land Institute reports, or if IREM's got a report, look at our peer industries and things that they publish, because they really can give you that extra edge or insight that, as Robin points out, will either help you invest or help you better understand how to price that property.
So read the tea leaves is what you're saying, Casey.
Yeah.
Great. Well, once the tide turns and we really enter this full-blown recession, you know, what sort of appraisal jobs and services are going to be in high demand?
Ooh. Well, I think those that really can do more than walk and chew gum, you know, as we've talked about, could you do adaptive reuse? We're remaking our supply chain in America. We're having rail mergers, Kansas City Southern and Canadian Pacific. There's probably going to be Canadian National that's going to go after CSX or Norfolk Southern. What does that mean if our supply chain moves more north-south from Canada to Mexico than it does from California to Chicago? Huge implications if you do industrial. A multifamily, I hear too many multifamily appraisers say, I just do apartments, I don't worry about single family. You better pay attention to single family. Commercial real estate follows the rooftops. And if the rooftops are bad and people aren't selling their homes because they can't afford a new mortgage or whatnot, then it affects what can happen to multifamily. And I think multifamily is going to continue to stay very strong. You can't buy a home. The mortgage rates have doubled. The interest rates have doubled. So people are backing up, and the new household formation is going to have to stay in multifamily. So I think, you know, we become more kind of more complex. You better be beefed up on your economic skills. You better know, for example, right now, we don't have LIBOR anymore. We have SOFR, the overnight funding rate. Can any of you ever remember a time when LIBOR was above the 10-year treasury? Well, the LIBOR replacement so far last week was above the 10-year treasury. This is insane. Those are construction loans. So if you're looking at almost a 4% variable rate SOFR construction loan, what do you think that's going to do to construction lending? So you need to understand how these economic pieces you know, feed into different things. Look at the volatility index, the VIX. I'm sure, Robin, you look at that. It tells you when the market's in freakout mode. And when we're in these periods of transition where things are bottoming down, that's where appraisers do their work that's going to expose them most to litigation. So you need to be tougher at, you know, how you defend certain assumptions. And that's why in a cash flow DCF, you know, I'll use and look at those earnings statements that talk about absorption, or, you know, say like a Home Depot's only built 5 stores in the last 4 years and none with a garden center. So when I'm doing an appraisal on one of those, I have some nuggets out of those earnings that I can point to and I can utilize it, bulletproof myself, as Stephanie Coleman tells at the Institute. So beef up your skills, be much more diverse, beef up your economic skills, and be a voracious reader.
So I have a question adding on to that. Do you think you'll see more foreclosure type of jobs out there in this market if the recession continues? And this is, you guys are the experts being an appraiser. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, go ahead, Rob. I really don't, because on the residential, we've got a lot of equity in our homes. People have 2.9 to 3.5 interest rates. They don't have to move. They can keep it going. They've been paying down those mortgages. There's a lot of equity. We have some of the most amount of equity in our single family home. So I don't see it big time on the residential. Plus, there's so many, you know, workforce that can't find housing that you can at least rent it and pay your mortgage. On the commercial, I think it could be bad in office, but it's going to be big office. It's going to be the big CBD stuff that the life companies are trying to dump right now. Yep. They know they've already lost 20% of the value. They know they're going to lose another 30%. Retail, we've already gone through it. We've been going through a decade of e-commerce really whacking retail, and we saw retail come through COVID and really become more service oriented than good selling. So if you look at a shopping center today, there's more services that are in those bays than there are good selling type things. Like I said, I don't see the problems in multifamily. I don't see them in warehouse. Remember, commercial follows the rooftops, right? And I don't see an implosion on the rooftop. So I don't think it's going to be like what we're seeing in a recession now is what we thought we were going to see in 2021. And it's all Fed induced. And so if the Fed can knock it off, if they don't, hell, they're just going to ruin the world.
And, you know, Johnny, to piggyback on that, the thing that I think about when you're talking about foreclosure, I think the one group that really probably has the highest risk is that buyer who bought at the top of the market. They were one of 20 people who went and overbid a property by $100,000 just to get the property. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden they lose their job, right? Mm-hmm. And then their property's not worth that overpayment that they made. It'll be so much easier for somebody to walk away from a property like that than if they had some equity, or if they had, you know, some skin in the game. So there might be a few of those transactions when it comes to the foreclosures. But, you know, when you're thinking about doing the work, you know, I know that Lucas asked about, you know, the work that's going to be coming through, what's going to look like, that kind of thing. You really got to think in terms of, like, in 2000 and when it hit the fan in 08 and 09, there was a lot of work out there. There was a lot, but that's when we were doing a lot of workout stuff.
Right.
But that work was so much more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It was so much more diverse. It is so much easier to be an appraiser in an up market when everything's going well, when everything's upswinging, when everything's, you're going to have to drop that word cookie cutter out of your brain right now and know that you're just not going to have that luxury of that cookie cutter, because number one, the market's not going to allow for it. Cause we're used to looking back as appraisers, but now it's hard to look back. What are you going to see when you look back 3 months ago? You're going to see a whole different interest rate environment. You're going to see a whole different buying environment. We're used to looking back and we just don't have that luxury. So we're going to have to really put on our thinking caps as appraisers, really turn on what we're doing. And it's going to be really difficult. It's hard, hard work to appraise in this type of economy. So I get excited about it, but I'm kind of nerdy like that, you know, where I like the numbers. I like to try to, Casey, I know you're smiling, but I know you're like that too, you know, where you really want to go in and you want to figure this out, you know, figure out the current puzzle. But all appraisers are going to have to do that in this current economic climate, because it's just different than it is when we're in a really big upswing.
Give you a great example of what Robin's talking about. Look at redemptions in REITs right now. We've seen from BlackRock and we've seen from Starwood. It started over in UK over a month ago. And so when these REITs can't meet the redemption requests, you get entities that start to freak out and they really want to know the valuation of that REIT and the individual assets that underline them. That's where they call someone like Rodman or myself and say, help me figure out this whole REIT puzzle and what it's worth. And should I stay in? Should I get out? Should I freak over these redemptions? That's exactly what Rodman's talking about. We're going to see different structures, different challenges. They're more complex. And you've got to understand how those capital vehicles really translate to our world? So what does a REIT world mean in terms of valuation downstream? Or, you know, you look at, you know, look at the NAREIT data, look at the agricultural, the NCREIF has a farmland index, and they have funds that are in there buying up, you know, billions of dollars of farmland every year. And if you look at them, you go to the USDA farmland survey every year, they track every acreage sale over 100 acres and they compute a cap rate. The average cap rate's below 3%. Are you kidding me? But that's what farmland and ranch land is for. If you can value that and understand those pieces, you have a niche. And all of those old ag appraisers, they're all dying or having hip replacements and can't go inspect the properties. They need a new generation. So if you're in the Middle West part of the country, there's a huge opportunity. We're losing almost all of our ag and farm and ranch land appraisers. There's just, like you said, Robin and Johnny, there's a lot of opportunity if we take time to back up and look at things from a broader view.
Yeah. Well, you touched on an interesting, you know, aspect. You know, since the Great Recession, the real estate market's enjoyed over a decade of stability and value growth. For those appraisers who've never really experienced valuing properties during a downturn, you know, what advice would you have for them on, you know, what they might expect and how they might gear up?
I would just say be the best at what you do. I mean, I tell that to every appraiser, though. I mean, you know, it's one thing to come into the profession and be an appraiser, but it's a whole nother thing to be among the best of appraisers, right? I always tell people that you'll always, as long as you're among the best of appraisers, you'll always have work. You'll always have opportunities. You'll always have a career path. So I always tell people, you know, get as knowledgeable as you can, get good mentoring, surround yourself by good, smart people, and then do everything that you can to excel in the profession. That's, you know, even as our profession evolves, it's evolved and evolved and evolved. It'll always be evolving. People go, well, it's dying. Well, it's not dying. It's evolving, right? So you can either be that person who evolves with it. And if you're seeing the recession for the first time, just ask the questions for the, you know, the folks who have been through it. You know, like, you know, I think both Johnny and Casey said, you know, we're an aging profession, and that is the truth. We are. But there is such a vast vault of knowledge within so many incredible people. Utilize that. Talk to them. Mentor. Learn what they went through. Learn what they had. And like Casey said, this might be a whole nother type of recession this time. But that's okay. There's still a lot to be learned with what's been learned with past recessions. So put on the thinking cap. That's all I had to say, and be good at what you do.
Tack on to Rodman's point, put on the thinking cap. I would advise all appraisers to identify three things that they don't understand a lot about, but they're hearing about in the market or in the news. So number one, you know, not being able to get withdrawals out of REITs. What does that mean? What is that opportunity for real estate? Number two, adaptive reuse. It gets additional capital. Adaptive reuse really is good ESG, and you get good ESG capital for adaptive reuse projects, but nobody knows how to do it because there's no permanent capital. So a philanthropic person fixes some blighted asset in their local community because they want to fix it, and then they want to take it to the permanent market. The CMBS market doesn't know how to price it or what its underwritable debt service coverage is. The rating agencies don't know how to do it. The insurance companies don't know what fund or bucket to put it into. So, you know, really understanding what is the value of adaptive reuse when there are no transactions after it's done. And how do you value that? How do you think through it? And then I'd say the third thing is look at opportunities like this PACE program, Property Assessed Clean Energy. There's probably not 50 appraisers in the 35 states that know how to value it and know the underwriting, just like if you were in a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or HUD type program on multifamily. They don't understand how to do it. And you've got billions of dollars of transactions occurring every day, every year in these particular states. So go become an expert in property assessed clean energy. There are so many every day, you know, manufactured housing. You know, you look at these for rent subdivisions that have cratered, all of these that, you know, were built up by entities like American Homes for Rent. Go pick two or three of these and become an expert. But what one thing that we fail to do is we get our basic continuing education, we take our USPAP recertification, and we don't take anything new. And the last one I think that Johnny you might talk to is, you know, there's more business value and enterprise value in different types of real estate today than ever before because of the institutional capital like REIT money that came into, you know, first self-storage, and now it's coming into manufactured housing. The mom and pop industry is going away. It's becoming more institutional. There's business enterprise there. There's huge opportunities for property tax appeal or helping segregate. As it says in the interagency guidelines, you can only value the fee simple, the market value, not the going concern. You got to segregate that. How many do really know how to segregate that and use the technology and have the business value skills to do it? If you do, lots of opportunities. So pick three things you've heard about, you haven't really studied, and go get the education. And the last thing I would say is don't be afraid to go attend a meeting or affiliation with one of our peer groups. You know, you got CCIM Institute, you've got IRIM, you've got all of these others that complement what we do, whether it's brokerage, whether it's property management. Remember what IRIM did for us as appraisers during COVID. They lent us all of their annual property inspection videos and photographs so that state by state, we could be exempted from doing in-person inspections during COVID. So our peer partners, our affiliates are very, very good friends. Go to a meeting, get to know them. Don't be isolated. They could teach you something.
Yeah, Lucas, I cannot not take this opportunity to promote ASA because there was a couple of things that stated knowledge, networking and so forth. And that's what organizations like ASA provides individuals, especially during this time, because you need to increase your knowledge on all the things that Casey and Rodman just talked about. And that's what organizations like mine provide, is that education. And then also the networking. I mean, as what has been said, you know, reach out to individuals, mentors and so forth, so that you can gain some more experience, because there have been a number of people who have been through this process before. So learn from them, and our members are those individuals that went through it at one time. So get involved with organizations like ASA and have access to education that's going to help you.
Yeah, I think it's important that, you know, we just sort of call out that we, you know, as an entire profession, we're very lucky that we have these organizations that are here to support, you know, the entire profession and, you know, help appraisers through these tough times and provide guidance. I mean, they were pivotal through COVID. And I know, you know, Rodman, you know, led a lot of that, and, you know, especially on, you know, the other side with Bill Garber, and, you know, sort of transitions to the next question that I have is, you know, from the legislative side, what important legislation is currently being worked on that could have an impact on the appraisal industry?
Well, the PAVE report, have you looked at that? I mean, that's definitely going to change the landscape, or trying to change the landscape. I mean, I think a number of things that came out of that was the profession as a whole, we need to diversify it. We need to provide some other opportunities for allowing individuals to come into this profession. We've seen there's been some obstacles and barriers in place, and the PAVE report and the legislation has, or some of the legislation has been trying to put in place to make changes there. So I think that's what's going to really impact this profession. And I will also say the profession has heard that, and we're trying to do things to make changes. We're not sitting back and waiting for the government to come in and change what we're doing. ASA, Appraisal Institute, and a number of organizations are making changes. One of the things that, and I think Rodman will talk about this a little bit, is the Perea program. You know, that's really going to change the landscape for allowing individuals to come into this profession without having to do what we've had the system in place before. So those are the things that I definitely see that's going to happen from a legislation standpoint.
And like you said, Johnny, we've got to step down. If we want diversity, we've got to go figure out where that is. And if all we've been doing is reaching out for population professionals in one area, and we haven't found them, then we need to rethink that. And maybe it's at the community college level. Maybe it's at other institutions. And how do we deliver that? Because I know for myself, if I mentor an appraiser along, right, for 2 years, and they get their license, guess what happens? They get hired by somebody else, or a bank, or a Wall Street institution, making double what I can pay. And am I really incentivized to go back and do that whole process again? Probably not. So if we can create more that uses technology, that creates a better or different mentoring program, that's better for our industry. So those in the industry out there that are peers that haven't understood and look at what PAVE or PAGE or PAREA mean, it's very material, and it's really aimed at, you know, getting the diversity that we've lost. I grew up as a third generation appraiser, MAI. You know, it was just part of the DNA. And so a lot of the industry looks more like me, because it was a homegrown industry that grew up with their kids. And as an industry, we really didn't reach down and try to diversify. It wasn't intentional to keep people out. It just was, we followed an easy path. And now we've got to change that up in a radical way. So if you don't understand PAVE or PAREA, you really do need to. It's coming fast. It's going to change our landscape like we've never seen before. And then I think the other thing is there's more complexity to our properties and more property types than we've ever thought about our core four or five, you know, whether it's adaptive reuse or for rent subdivisions or manufactured home communities, that you now can get a Fannie Mae loan on a manufactured home community. How many appraisers know that? What does that mean for a game changer on housing affordability? So you're right, Johnny, Pave, and Faria, go study the heck out of them. They're coming fast.
Yeah, and when a lot of these issues started presenting themselves, you know, it's really easy to put your head in the sand and say, hey, there's not a problem, right? But it takes really strong leadership to go, if there's a problem, we want to be a part of the solutions, right? And so, you know, a lot of this stuff was coming in during my term as AI president. And I wanted to make sure that we were going to be a leader in the space, that we were going to be looking for solutions, trying to identify that problem. That's what we do as appraisers. We identify the problem, and then we give an appraisal or do a solution. And so for me, it was going to be really important that that's what we were going to do. We were going to be a part of the conversations. We were going to be moving the discussion. We were going to, and the thing about like the Appraisal Institute is we've always wanted diversity. You know, we've always looked for diversity, but it's always been a very hard lift. But when all this, the bias and some of the other issues started coming to the forefront, we really had an opportunity to also say, here's who we are. We want you to be a part of us. So we had scholarships that, you know, we couldn't get our scholarships, our diversity scholarships. We couldn't get those to move. And when all of a sudden these issues started coming up, it was an opportunity for us to say, here we are, this is what we have available. And then those scholarships started getting used. People started coming in. That last conference that I went to, the last Appraisal Institute conference that I went to, I was blown away when I walked around that room to see how much diversity that had already been created within our landscape, just within a short period of time. And I know, Johnny, you were there too. And I got to meet a lot of people who were in the programs, who were going through the training, who were coming up and through. And I'll tell you, it was one of the most gratifying things for me to see is the difference that 1 year could make in terms of diversity. Young, diverse, intelligent, very professional, just incredible people coming into the profession that I couldn't have even imagined that we were going to get in. So there was, yes, a little bit of a difficult period of time, and there's still some difficult periods of time, but I will say that we're making really good headway right now. I feel that we're moving the ball. I think that is where we set the benchmark to see where we were at. I think when we start gauging how we're moving, I think we're going to have some very good upward mobility in our diversity. The other thing that I would say that in terms of legislative action, something that's been on my plate for a long time, it's going to fall off my plate here in about 2 weeks because I will no longer be the in the AI leadership, but there's the Powell Act that we've had out there for a long time too and been pushing. And that's an appraisal portal. Like right now, if you go get licensed, there's so many appraisers who are licensed in multiple states. So if you're licensed in 10 states, 15 states, you go through fingerprinting through 10 to 15 states. You go through background checks for all 10 to 15. The Powell Act is trying to streamline that so you can go one application process, one set of fingerprints, one set of background checks. And then, yeah, you're still going to pay state licensing fees because you've got to have the states be able to function. They do need to raise monies in order to be regulatory, to regulate the industry. But my gosh, I mean, for somebody who holds a lot of licenses, to be able to go to one place to get licensed will take, I can't even tell you how many hours off an appraiser's plate. So that's a piece of legislation that's sitting out there. I hope that eventually that gets passed because that would be such less burden for appraisers out there in terms of that licensing process. So keep an eye on that. And if you get a chance, I would, you know, call your legislators and support that too, because I think it's a really good thing for appraisers.
Leadership on that, because I gave up, you know, having 10 licenses and just do enough expert witness that I go get the temporary license. So Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Colorado, four of the most difficult. The fees range from $30 to $400. And it can take anywhere from 2 weeks to 2 months. It just took 2 months in Florida because of the harassment factor to get it all the way through. So you're exactly right. And so thank you for your leadership on that. It could be a game changer. That's one of those legislative things all of us should support.
Yeah. And Ron, what I was going to say is hopefully if we can get that passed, then we can move forward with CE too, because as you know, if you're getting your CE, you got to get it for each state. And on the back end, from an administrative standpoint, it's a pain to get the programs approved by each state. So if it was some type of clearinghouse that can do that, it would be great.
And that would go perfectly with that portal. I mean, yeah. The licensing portal. So I agree with you 100%.
Exactly.
That sort of leads into the next question here, which is, are there any existential threats to the appraisal profession that we really should keep our eye on?
No.
Well, I'll throw out technology. Just what technology has done in the residential side, on the commercial side, if we don't pay attention, there's so much that can be loaded, whether it's data sources. I mean, I even did some review work where one particular firm, all they did was they had their automated software download everything out of Wikipedia and put it into the reports, and they didn't even cite them, and they got sued. But I think technology now is moving quick enough. We thought it would never affect us in commercial real estate because all leases were proprietary and they were unique enough. And guess what? You have entities like a CompStack today that collect all the leases and they can load them into anything. But I think technology, those that aren't up to speed with it, that know how to use it and check it, make sure that it's not abused and validated. But I think technology, I honestly believe, you know, I'm 60, and I think I'm hoping I'll be done before 70. But I think within the next 10 years that we will see such a change in technologies that as much as half of the professionals that we use today will be functionally and economically obsolete. So you better stay on top of technology. I think that is the big one.
Yeah, and I'll add on there, and I'll tell you a story. I mean, my background is running associations. So prior to coming to this organization, I ran medical associations. And same thing for medicine was technology and specifically AI. And so as I looked at our x-ray technicians, you know, you go in and break your leg or something like that, you go get an x-ray. And if 5 years ago or 3 years ago, it would take a couple of days for you to get back the results of that x-ray because the technician is inundated with all the other stuff, but the technician had to look at it to ensure that, you know, they can tell you what the diagnosis is. Well, AI came aboard, and as AI started to learn, you know, more and more x-rays they looked at, the better they were in order to come back with the diagnosis very quickly. And so this field was very concerned about AI coming in and taking over what they were doing. And that's what was happening. And what they ended up doing was, yes, they're going to use AI to help with the simple stuff, but the complex stuff is where you're going to need that technician. So I tell that story is that AI or technology is going to come into this field. We can't stop it, but we can work with it. We can figure out ways that we can use the technology to complement what we do today. So, you know, the appraiser may not have to worry about the basic stuff because that's what the AI is going to do. But the complex stuff is where the expertise is going to come in that AI can never get to.
Yeah. And to piggyback on that, with every threat comes opportunity. And the opportunity is we've got an aging profession. And for people who are coming into the industry, people who are the younger professionals who are looking for a place to land, appraisal is such a perfect place for them because, number one, they're going to be able to adapt to the technology. I mean, you know, like Casey was saying, it's kind of like you get to a point in life where it's like, do I really want to go back and learn all this new stuff? Do I really want to go back and learn this new technology, all this these emerging things that maybe it's time for me just to hang it up, right? We've got a lot of that with the aging population. So for us, you know, to be sitting in the situation that we're in, if I were a young professional looking for something that's going to require technology and you got to be tech savvy, we're always going to need people to analyze the data. Yeah, you might be able to have AI, you might be able to have some structures or some valuation processes in place, but somebody's got to be there to maneuver the levers. Somebody's got to be able to pull the handle, right? And so I think there's going to be great opportunities for young appraisers coming in because of technology.
So to show you that, I have all my dad and grandfather's legacy appraisals back to the 1940s and 50s. So they were little skinny things put on onion skin paper because you can only fit so many carbons in there. They had the, you know, color code in the map exhibits. They used Polaroid film. And so they're pretty thin, but they had none of the data that we do today. And so the analysis to do these might take 2 or 3 weeks that we can do in 2 or 3 days today. And it's going to get quicker and quicker than that. So, you know, if you don't think it changes a lot, you know, just I think back in my career, when I first started, how many trips a week I made to the film place to drop film off to get all the prints already done.
1 hour, you know, photo, yep.
What's film and what's a photo place anymore when we have our cameras? So if, you know, when I started in 1985, I bought my first computer, which was a compact that had the fold down screen where you put the DOS floppy in and then you'd put in, you know, it was Lotus, I think. We didn't have Excel back then or a word processor. you know, that was only 30, 35 years ago. And you just think of the evolution, and every computer cost about $3,000 until about 10 years ago. Then they dropped to $500, but every edition. And so when you think about the data, different data resources, where you can look, I mean, I use a system called Castle Systems for Office, who's going back to work by state, that I rarely see in an appraisal analysis. Johnny, you talk about, you know, think of Knight on all of what's happening on the foreclosures and whatnot. It's just not developing. So good Knight data type stuff, the earnings reports. So it's changing so quickly that I can't even imagine where this profession is in 10 years, but you're both right. The high skill, those that keep up will be valued. The low skill, the commodity, fast and cheap appraiser, you're gone.
Yeah. And people talk all the time, Lucas, about how there's less and less licensees, right? Well, we're not doing less work. We're doing more work than we've ever done, but more work is being done by less appraisers. And that's the evolution of technology. So, you know, if you, like I said, you're either going to embrace technology and you're going to evolve with it, or you're going to either phase yourself out and somebody's going to come in and they're going to be the next generation of appraiser too. So, you know, and again, you know, I know that I said, you know, a lot of times, like it, when I talk about even me learning new tricks, you know, I haven't appraised for like 4 years. You know, I've gone to the leadership. I've been doing a lot of work with the AI. I dread kind of going back and learning the new technology, because even in those 4 years since I've been gone, it's evolved substantially, right? And so, yeah, I look at it and I look at our industry. I look at the age of the industry. If I was a young person and I was looking at our industry, well, I'd be salivating at the opportunities that there are in the appraisal world.
Lucas and Valkyrie will help you out.
I need it.
It's definitely something that, you know, we are very confident in the industry, and we see it as a big opportunity, you know, bringing younger team members into the profession and, you know, teaching them the ways and having, you know, a more technological and streamlined way of creating appraisals. I mean, you talk about going to the 1 hour photo, and now you just, you know, you load your photos right in from your camera and you can create maps on the fly. And it's just, you know, there's just so much more opportunity for adding that real analysis that, you know, comes from actually somebody's head versus, you know, the commoditized items of, you know, gathering data or pulling in photos and things like that, that, you know, is not necessarily the true value that appraisal clients are actually paying for, right? They're paying for the analysis of real estate. And at the end of the day, they're paying for the opinion of value that that appraiser is providing.
So. Yeah. I mean, the days of 4 hours to tape photos into reports are gone. Thank goodness. Cause I remember those days where you used to have that quarter and you used to have to, you know, rub off the subject arrow and then the comparables. I mean, people don't know when you think back to it. I mean, I know a lot of people complain about fee, and how fees have not gone up, but I always ask, are you making less money? And the answer is always no, exactly. You're probably getting the same fees back then, but just think how long it took them to put together that report.
Yep.
Just think.
Well, I want to touch back on, Casey, you mentioned the PAVE report, and, you know, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, you know, how racial bias continues to be a real polarizing topic in, you know, both residential and commercial real estate appraisal industry. And, you know, what's your take on this important issue, and, you know, what inroads are being made across the profession to combat this issue?
Rodman and Johnny, why don't you take the first bite at that? Cause you've been really deep in the weeds on that.
Yeah. Johnny, go ahead. I've got some stuff that I can talk about, but I'd love to yield the floor to you.
I mean, so it's definitely affecting the profession as we see. I think the key here is to education. So one of the things that myself and a lot of the other organizations have done is come together for the profession to educate the profession on what's happening in this in terms of bias and so forth. Right at the beginning of the pandemic and why these stories were coming out, we did actually a really good webinar. And when I say organization, it was ASA, AI, MBREA, farm managers, IAAO, and NSREA. So we all came together and said, hey, we got to do better for this profession, and let's so educate the profession. And what we talked about, or what the topics that we covered in this webinar, was unconscious bias. You know, as someone said, there's bad apples in every profession. And so we didn't necessarily want to grab these bad apples and say, hey, you're messing up. What we ended up doing is taking a step back and say, okay, let's look at this in its entirety and see what could be the issues here. And all of us, and I'm talking all of us, have some type of bias. Mm-hmm. And we have unconscious bias that we don't realize that we have. And so we took that approach, and we're continuing to take that approach, is education. You know, let's educate our profession on what unconscious bias is, what you're bringing to the table. And once you are aware of that unconscious bias, you can make a change. You could do different, you can change the way that you look at things because if you're recognizing that unconscious bias. So that's one of the things that we taken on and we're continuing to do is from an education standpoint. The other things that we're doing is, you know, we seen the pay report, all of us have looked at it. There are some things that we don't necessarily agree with, but there are some things that we do agree with. And those things that we do agree with, we're trying to work together with the foundation. Perea is an example of trying to change the obstacles that we have in place right now for entry into this profession. As Casey said, and a lot of our members are saying the same thing, you know, they came in this industry because their mother, their father, and so forth were the ones that brought them in. Well, we need to figure out how we can also entice those that are not necessarily in that, have that opportunity of family members saying, hey, you should come into this industry. And I think a program like Perea is going to allow us to do that because it takes away some of those obstacles that we have in place. So that's another thing that we're working towards to help with this issues that we're seeing on the bias standpoint, where we're trying to diversify the profession to bring other individuals in that are not what we see today. So those are kind of the two big points I think we're seeing and what we're trying to do as a profession when it comes down to bias.
Well, and I think some of those things that we're doing, like I said, I feel they're working. I feel like we're doing the work, and I feel like we're really moving the ball forward on those. So I'm pretty happy on what we're doing right now to try to get that diversification, to try to get, you know, our appraiser population to look like the general population, right? And we just don't look like that right now. So I think we're doing really good work on that. I think one of the places that we're lacking is I don't feel like we've truly identified the big problem yet. I think we're still working toward that. I think that there's still a lot of work to be done. I mean, we're talking about years of systemic issues in neighborhoods that are still holding on. They still have a grip on what we're doing today. I think, you know, until we really get our arms around what we can do to kind of change that, it's still kind of one of those things where, and there's brilliant people working on this, by the way. I mean, the professors that are working on this, the people that are in there actually doing the work are brilliant, brilliant people. But I don't really know that we've really, really got to the problem. And there's reasons for that. I mean, if you think about even a lot of these reports that you see on bias, like on the news, you know, we don't see those appraisal reports. So, you know, as an appraiser, I would have loved to have seen the two appraisal reports in question and go, well, which one is right and which one is wrong? Is this a true case of bias, or is this unfortunately just a really bad appraiser who didn't have the geographic competence to go and do work in that area? You know, it's been really hard because we don't have the data to conclude as much as we'd like to conclude. So I think it makes it really hard for us in terms of figuring out what that solution is going to be when we're still looking really hard to make sure that we've got the problem identified. So I think it's an issue that we're still going to have to be studying, that we're going to be consistently working on, not just the next year, not the next 2 years, but we have to really make sure that we're doing deep dives, looking at all the data, make sure that we're trying to, again, be part of solutions, because it's such a big topic and such a big issue. I will say it's probably one of the most difficult issues that I dealt with in my professional career. Because I still, as much as I've gone through and like Johnny's done, I mean, I'm sure he has sat in room after room after room and had conversation after conversation after conversation. I feel like I've moved a little bit in my knowledge and getting closer to that solution, but I still feel like we've got just a lot of work that has to be done in that area yet. So, you know, I am encouraged. I will tell you this, there have been incredible leaders who have popped up in that space, people that I might not have known that came in and that showed really good leadership. I put together a team to really study every one of those reports that were coming out to see. And I told them when I put together this team that it wasn't about saying what's wrong in a report, but really trying to look at the data and go, well, where could these people maybe use better data? you know, the people who are doing the studies, where could they maybe have better data to move us closer to a solution? I wanted to make sure that we were always open-minded, but we had a tremendous leadership that stepped up, and we just concluded with some of our reports now. And I feel like we're closer to an answer or closer to identifying that problem, but I feel like we've got a long ways to go.
Right. And I want to add on before you say something, Casey. I also want to add on, and I said this publicly before, the appraisers got if you were a poker players, they got a bad set of cards. You know, think about it. I mean, the redlining and that sort of thing that happened years ago, and, you know, there was the act that changed that. But that set of cards didn't necessarily change for a lot of the other players that's in part of this poker table, because the lenders, they were still looking at this redlining and still using it and pushing our appraisers to do that. The realtors, that sort of thing. So I hate this. I mean, I feel sorry for our appraisers because they were just trying to do the job that was given to them with the cards that they had in their hands. And the other players weren't changing the landscape of that game. And so they, unfortunately, are the ones that's getting put in the limelight of not doing the appropriate thing, but they got a bad set of cards. And so that's what we're trying to do, is change that table, change those cards to help them be the better player at the table moving forward.
You know, we want real people, and you're right. It's a handful. I don't remember which you two gentlemen said that, but you know, there are bad actors in every profession. I don't care who it is. And you know, you can take the police for an example. You know, you get a bad police person and then all the police get lumped in, you know, in the same bucket, and it's not fair. But unfortunately, that's just kind of how we act and react at times. But yeah, AVMs, you know, if you start looking at the automated valuation models, and then they can start programming, if they can start programming what they want, they can start programming what they want to lend on too, and where they don't want to lend. And, you know, there is more scary things that could happen with AVMs than having a person go out and give an opinion of value.
You're right. Look at what insurance is. They've figured out how to go ahead and program your credit score in to affect your insurance rating. It's supposed to be an actuarial process on risk, not your credit. Anything can happen to somebody on credit, you know, medical or, you know, whatever. And so the insurance industry is a good bellwether to exactly what you're talking about, Rodman, in terms of, you know, the programming bias. And guess what? Most of the people managing these areas, we have no coding experience. We have no idea how to dig that stuff out of coding. Lucas does, but I know I don't. And so, you know, look at the regulatory environment. I compliment the Appraisal Institute, and I'm critical of them a lot, but they have stood up on these issues and any new data and said, one example is one too many. And
a lot of different bad actors and, you know, people in the industry, but it sounds like there's a lot of different professional organizations and appraisers really trying to push the ball forward to really improve, you know, what we have here. So let's transition to the last question that we've got, which is, as we head into 2023, the increasing adoption of technology is a big theme across the entire commercial real estate industry. Can you speak about the relationship between technology and appraisers? And, you know, do you foresee adoption accelerating or slowing amid the recession? Any sort of final thoughts that you guys might have?
Well, I mean, I think we saw technology accelerated tremendously over the last 2 years. And it had to, because, you know, again, people couldn't travel, couldn't leave and that sort of thing. So desktop appraisals was the only way you can do stuff. And I think people started to get a better understanding of technology and how you can use it to provide your services. I don't think that's going to discontinue. I think it's going to continue. And it may continue at the rate that we saw during the pandemic.
Evolve or die. I mean, that's the thing. It's like technology is not going to slow down for anybody. I mean, everybody, and I would even go out and say it's a technology race. I mean, the firms that are thriving are embracing technology and they're moving it forward. And if you're a firm who's not embracing the technology, or if you're a firm who's not keeping up with the technology, you know, you're going to be upset that your fees are lower. You're going to be upset that you can't get as much done. You're going to be upset that you can't deliver as quickly. You just don't have a choice. I mean, the thing about it, and that's for every profession, not just the appraisal profession. I mean, technology is going crazy for every profession. Can you imagine being a taxi driver? You know, I mean, I would hate it to be a taxi driver. And then I've got Uber who comes in and smashes us, right? Well, they smashed them with technology. So, you know, technology is one of those things that is here to stay. If you say that it can't get any quicker, it can't get any more efficient and that, then you're just wrong. I mean, you've got to embrace it. You've got to make sure that you are on board with either a technology provider like yourself who is advancing technology. I mean, are you taking a break? Lucas, are you sitting back and going, I don't think we should do any advancements to our technology this year? I don't think so, right? And I don't think any firm out there who has got technology is doing that either. So keep up with technology. Technology is the thing that's, if you want a raise in what you're in a professional raise, quit complaining about the fees and get really good at your technology.
Yep, I would agree. And, you know, just look at, you know, you think about Uber and its impact on taxi drivers. Well, now Uber is launching driverless Ubers in Las Vegas. So the Uber drivers are going to be gone. And I always tell people, study what's going on in the auto industry to understand what's coming in all the other industries. You know, you look at what happens in auto, it's all about the payment. You know, that's what's happening again in housing. It's how can we get the payment, you know, right, rather than worry about what the price is. What happens in housing then happens in commercial real estate in the finance markets. And so you're exactly right. The technology is, you know, what we're going to see in the next 10 years, you know, we'll dwarf what we saw over probably 40 or 50 years. I think in 1985, starting, you know, a compact laptop that I had to put a, you know, DOS disk in to start up that cost $3,500 and couldn't print anything out. And I couldn't remember the print screen to get it to connect to a printer. Or when you look at where we are today and think about our phones and our cameras and how you can sync up to everything. I just ordered something from Sony the other day that is a portable printer that can take a picture and print your business card on the backside and have a picture. So if I'm doing something or a marketing or I'm in the field, you know what I can do. So I think that's one of the biggest things that we're gonna have to do. And I think in our professional associations, we need to think more than we just gotta provide continuing education for our USPAP recertification. We need to think about all these other things. And you know, in the CCIM Institute, one of the things we have is a thing called the Ward Center for Real Estate. So I call them the tune-up classes. They're just a few hours, but they'll take something that's burgeoning, you know, like Carvana right now and the story on it, or I'll do one on logistics and what's happening with the change in the ports. And it's a 2 to 3 hour tune-up on something that you've done. And I think that appraisers look for those tune-up opportunities, look like in Marshall Valuation to take the tune-up on your certification for doing replacement costs. I do it every other year because I don't do it enough that I'll screw up the replacement costs or reproduction costs that I'm trying to do in my valuation report. When I go into court, I'm one of only maybe three people in the last 2 years that's had that certification. And so again, it distinguishes yourself. It gives you another ability or platform to dialogue with your clients. And as one of you pointed out, you know, it's all about the analytics. And if you can deliver analytics, it's not about appraising in the number, it's about an analytics and how you can support and connect dots to that value opinion. And those that can do that really well will have a good, bright future.
Yeah, I mean, the key is to be prepared to adopt the technology. Don't be afraid of the technology. I think, Casey, I think you just said, you talked about technology in a business card. I mean, so I'm talking to some young guys. Actually, I was in Vegas, I think, and had a great conversation, and it came to the point to give them a business card. And it's like, no, I don't need your business card. They just pulled out this e-card, touched my phone, and I had all their contact information. So that's just an example of we need to be prepared for that next generation of technology because it's coming.
We even started 2 years ago, we started the company putting the QR code on the back of the business card. So I only carry one of these and I say, just take a picture of the QR code. You've got, and not only the card, but you got everything else you need, my website. If I want to, I've got different ones that have, if they need a sample black line report or something like that, or a presentation. So you're exactly right. How these will be obsolete is obsolete as the HP 12 city. Right. I still use.
Yeah, technology really is going to allow you to, you know, not have to spend as much time doing the other things. So you can spend more time with education, more time with client development, more time, you know, actually looking at the data and understanding what's going on in the industry.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Johnny, Casey, and Rodman for joining us and for your invaluable insights and observations about the current state of the commercial real estate market. Until next time, I'm Lucas Roeder, and this has been Opinions of Value. Thanks.
Thank you.